Please listen carefully.
And now, live from the Arboretum in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, with two hosts who are frantically trying to figure out the logistics of a unicycle built for two, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today, on our 300th episode, we have a guest who was on episode 52. And we thought, what better way to celebrate 300 episodes than to bring someone back, and someone back who's kind of important to us, whether he knows it or not, our first real big industry guest. He gave us the confidence to do this. Because we were just baby podcasters then.
True.
And we've kept going, and we've built upon it. And because we had Evil Ted, we were eventually able to have Billy West. And so now, to bring him back,
yes,
to say thank you and to see what he's been up to over these years, it's been years since we talked to him, here he is, Evil Ted.
Evil Ted.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, guys, everybody. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
I am honored.
Thanks for being here.
I'm going to be the 300th guest.
Yeah, episode 300. It's a big one.
No idea we would get this far.
Now, when you guys first approached me, you said that you gave me some form of credit for keeping you guys going. What did I say? Did I tell you guys not to stop doing this? Or was I just so fandom of you guys making your own thing? What was it?
Yeah. To be honest with you, we weren't 100% sure what we were doing.
Yeah.
for real.
We were.
Nobody does.
Yeah. We were working with Akon. They gave us press passes, which we didn't really deserve to have, but the lady listened to our podcast and she liked the way we sounded. So she gave us press passes. And our buddy Scott, who's now our producer, we were supposed to go through them to get any guest bookings. And it was so hard to get guest bookings. And Scott wanted you on so bad that he's like, I'm just going to corner him after one of his panels and see if he'll come on. And you were gracious enough to say, yes, come by my booth and we'll talk a little bit. And we're like, okay, that's awesome. And then we're like, oh my God, we're talking to someone who's actually done stuff. Because, I mean, we talked to cosplayers before, and there are local cosplayers. And no offense, those are great people to talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
But we never actually talked to someone who'd been in the industry or was a marquee guest that people actually go to conventions to see. And I remember I talked way too loud and way too fast because I was all nervous and stuff. But at the end of it, you said, hey, that was really good. I really enjoyed that. That was great. And we went, oh, he said that was good.
And we survived. We didn't pass out. We didn't faint, you know.
Yeah.
We still had most of our dignity.
No. Yeah.
And it was really like at the end of it, like one, you doing it and us getting through it. But you also like your whole message. And like we had followed you when we were going to that con because we were learning about these people that were going to be there. And what struck us was your message of just like, you know, making things and having a passion for it. And that was so in tune with like the message we were trying to put out with the podcast, even in episode 50. And then so like having the chat with you and then just reaffirming that, it was just such a good experience. Like mm-hmm. when it finished, it was like, we feel awesome.
Oh, guys, thank you so much. That's been my mission with everybody. And for people listening right now, I can't say enough is that you have to be, it's just, there's constant failing or something. It's the constant moving forward. There's a great phrase. I forgot who said it, but I always stuck in my head. Do not wait to have the skill set to start suing something. You just start going and you learn as you go. If you sit there and think, oh, I'm just going to wait till I learn all this stuff, then I'll start building. That's not going to happen. It's like you have to move forward and fail and fumble to learn what you're doing. And like you guys start your podcast, like, we're going to do this. And as you times press on, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, we got to get better microphones, or yes, we got to make sure we have some sound dampening before. It's like you don't know until you start. And if you actually knew all the stuff that went into doing it, you wouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it. It's no fear. You just got to move forward with that. And so, guys, thanks. And it's when I saw you guys, I was at the peak of my YouTubeism Mm-hmm. And that was when the economy was really good. It was 2019. And I was cranking out videos. I would get like 2 videos up a month and patterns in my store. And I was cooking. It was all pre-COVID. And then COVID, of course, came, which we all know how devastating that was for all of us, that it kind of rattled the foundation of my YouTube. Like, I think what's funny is that when people were like, oh, we're trapped at home, we have to do lockdown. Mm-hmm. And so you're thinking, yay, we're locked down. I'm just going to stay home and be creative. And I wasn't. I was depressed. I was like, is this going to end? Like, it was hard to be creative during those times. So just let people know out there that we had all that time off. I didn't do a lot either. So
no, I get it. And I should have. One of the things, like one of my favorite parts about the podcast and like making our thing is that going out to conventions and interacting with people and having the life experience, like, yes, it's cool to watch the nerdy stuff or make the nerdy thing or, you know, pick up the cool collectible, but it's always been about the interaction. So I totally get it. Like, it shut down.
Yeah.
You know, so like not being able to go to conventions and hang out with our friends and like the new friends that we had just made with the podcast, like, We were at episode 50. We had just talked to somebody with cool credits. Like, you have a tie to the Fifth Element, and that'll forever be the coolest thing to me.
Oh.
And like, we nerded out about that the last time we talked to you. But so like not being able to reconnect with the friends that we made at conventions was just such like it put the brakes on everything.
Yeah.
It was real difficult. So yeah. I get what you're saying 100%.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's it's kind of fun to look at now that we're episode 300 because stuff's starting to pick up again. And I can see with you, I mean, you were getting a lot of views from cosplayers and you were showing people how to, you know, make stuff for cosplay and foam is king and you can do all this stuff. And then when everything shuts down, there's no conventions anymore. Well, what am I going to make this? The whole point of making a cosplay is to go to a convention so everyone can see it and I can be in a cosplay contest and I can, oh, wait, that person is also dressed like the character I'm dressed like. Oh, what did they do? What neat thing is there? Oh, did you do? Oh, wait, that looks like, did you get that from Ted too? Oh, yeah, you know, and you have all these things and it just stopped. I can see why you'd be depressed too because it's just, that was kind of your bread and butter, right?
Yeah, it was. And it was, and it's also, I tease Bill Duran a lot. Bill Duran, he loves doing content. He loves making videos, but it's like, he always feels going to a convention kind of takes him away from what he does. He's always like, if I do a convention, that means I'm not making content. It pulls me away from what I want to do. He goes, I'll do it. They pay me. I'll show up and do my thing. Because I really, and I'm always like, it's funny. And ever since he said that, and he taught me all this stuff. And again, a big shout out to Bill Duran, because when I started, I was just like, you guys. So I'm like, what do we do? How do you do? How do you post to YouTube? What are hashtags? What? Like, so as I was learning, I was at Seattle and Bill Duran was like, hey, man, like, listen, you got to hang out and talk shop. So he sat me down, handed me a notebook and a pen and goes, I'm going to give you everything you need to know about how to start a YouTube channel. And so he did. I sat down and I wrote down everything he told me. And I did it. I followed his rule to doing, and then like we bumped into each other like a year or two later. We always stayed in chat, but we did chat because we're always bouncing around. But then we were back together again, and Bill said to me, "Do you know how many people have come to me and asked me about they want to start a YouTube channel?" And I tell them, and then nothing comes of it. He goes, "You actually did it." And he goes, "You actually did everything I told you to do, and you have a YouTube channel." I said, "I know." And he goes, "You know why people don't do it? Because it's work." It's like, yeah. Once they realize the work it takes into making content and patterns and video and editing and promotion, it's like after a while, you're like, oh, this is like a full-time job.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that was a great honor. So Bill and I became really close. Yeah, we became close friends after that. It was kind of like going joke. Bill, I've done this with, so I got kind of discouraged because people kept asking me and I would tell them, and you know, after a while, I stopped doing it because nobody would listen. So he said, you did it. So there you are. And again, I don't feel down over the success of Bill is, but I want to let everybody know that I still love YouTube. I love doing it. I have slowed down a bit because I kind of gave you guys a little bit of a precursor. Mm-hmm. The mafia pulled me back in. I tried to leave, and as they say in Godfather, you try to leave, and they keep pulling you back in.
Yeah,
I with the economy thing going, I dipped my toe back in the Hollywood. I literally realized I was gone for 9 years. I literally retired from the movie industry. I started my YouTube. It was literally 9 years ago.
Okay.
When I got. So I left for 9 years and got, I dipped back in. And I got some nerdy stuff to tell you guys.
Oh yeah, I think we've seen some of it. But before we get into that, I've noticed that, and I want to know if this is a where you came from. This I've been seeing you doing a lot of Warhammer 40,000 stuff lately.
Oh my goodness! And yes,
is that something you were into? Are you a tabletop gamer, and we never came across this before, or is it just cool? Because it is cool. The lore is cool.
Yeah, what happened was there's a guy, Ironware Cosplay, and he's in Wales. And he reached out to me. He has a Twitch channel, and we became friends. And he's like, oh my God, Evil Tyler, I'm a huge fan. I've learned all my foam armor. And he's a big 40K guy. He builds giant 40K suits and bolters and weapons and hammers and chain swords. So
nice.
I knew of Warhammer. I knew of the character. I didn't really know that much about it, right? So I went on his show. And he started telling me about the lore. I was like, this is so cool. And then I started seeing figurines. And I saw the Battle Sisters. I started seeing weapons. I'm like, well, this is super cool. Again, guys, I apologize. I know some of the lore, not as much, because it is so in-depth. It's like trying to read the book Dune. There's so many levels of, like, characters and history and lore. It's just like, after a while, you're like, I can't keep up with any of this. So I got excited, and there was a Space Marine helmet I wanted to do. And again, I'm very lazy. People don't know this. I don't want to make a pattern. I just want to find it and build it. So as I was searching the internet, I found out there was no pattern for the helmet that I wanted. So I made like, I think, and again, I had to be educated by the Warhammer community. I think I built a battle of Primaris, battle premise. Like it was one of those red helmet. They had the feature and the face and the bends. Because there's so many, again, I learned really quickly, there's so many factions of Marines.
Yep.
That make your head explode.
Yep.
I was just like, good Lord. Yep. So I just built the guy I thought was cool. And then people kept correcting me, all the Warhammer enthusiasts, like, no, Ted, it's not what it's called. Oh, God, what it is. So cut me some slack. But I wanted to build a costume. And I have a family. And it's like, if I build a Space Marine, I'd have to have my family move out. So I figured I need something smaller. And so I decided to do a battle sister.
Yep.
And so that was my big Warhammer contributor, as I built a battle sister. And again, another thing I learned is we went to a convention here in California called Monster Palooza, where we premiered. We went to Anime LA first, then we did Monster Palooza. And I wanted to be with her at the convention. So I was walking around kind of being her costume handler. Mm-hmm. So I made a servo skull to float behind her. You know, when we were walking around just to be fun with a servo skull. And then again, the Warhammer community said, yeah, Ted, well, actually, the Battle Sisters don't have servo skulls. They have these flying babies, these...
they're like cherubs. They're like cherubs.
Cherubs, yeah. And so I'm like, oh, and when they started telling me about these like flying amoeba babies with wings, I was like, oh my God, now I have to make one. So,
yeah. That's funny.
It's funny too, because I'm you in this situation, because Warhammer is kind of hot right now, 40K. But we've actually talked about it a couple times on the podcast, and Kevin is the old lore head who's bringing me in. He's like, "Here's the lore," and I'm like, "That sounds so cool! Like, there's portals and like all the stuff." Just
yeah. Oh, it's insane.
Yeah, and there's a whole library.
Oh, fun fact,
please.
Fun fact is Event Horizon, the movie, and how they took the first jump to light speed, which opened the gates to hell, like a disparate dimension.
Yeah.
Found out from the grapevine that was inspired from Warhammer lore.
Oh, yeah.
That he loved the director loved it so much that he kind of borrowed that concept of by them doing light speed travel, opened the realm to another dimension, a dimension where there's different creatures and demons. And so. So that's all heavily influenced from Warhammer. The Warhammer goes back so many years.
Yeah,
such an old game.
That's crazy, though, and that makes so much sense, because I love Event Horizon, but it was always just weirdly creepy and didn't really give a reason why. It says, oh, we're going sideways in hell. It's like, okay, I guess that makes sense, but adding a little Warhammer logic to it, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's fun. It's been around since, like, the 80s, it's got so much stuff in, and it has stuff influenced from other stuff. Because there's a lot of Dune in Warhammer 40,000. So if you know Dune, then if you know Dune, if you like Dune, you're probably going to like the sci-fi and Warhammer 40,000. There's a lot of correlation.
A lot of Empire and Burst. Yeah.
I have to admit to being a little bit of a creep on your social medias, and I did see that you recently went and saw the new Dune. We just talked about the new Dune as well. I'm more curious about, like, what'd you think of it? Yes, but do you go into those movies, like, with prop master brain, and, like, are you able to see Dune as, like, a nerd? Are you able to see, or can you only see Dune as, like, oh, that's how I'd make that?
I'm one of those few people that actually can, I let go. I want to know nothing about it.
Cool.
I don't want to see a trailer. I just want to go. I want to enjoy the experience. And as I was watching the movie, here's the thing. Here's my, thank you for asking. So I do want to go on a Dune for a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it.
I have a love for the 1984 David Lynch one. I know it's not accurate, but the one thing that the new director, what's his name again? I'm sorry.
Denis Villeneuve?
Yeah, Denis Villeneuve. He knew that he had all these books. The first book, which is like a ton squeezed into such a small, but he did smart to break into two films. And even doing it in two films is still tight. That the choices, the things he chose to cut out really broke my heart, was he didn't get into the Mentats, the human computers. He didn't get into the guild navigators and he didn't get into the spiced melange. The entire thing that makes the entire Dune universe function is spice. They say it a million times in the movie and they know that they're like, oh, it's spice. It's like, but he never, there's tons of shots in movies and Channing, her girlfriend that wasn't in the book, cut all that crap out and just give me a little bit of what spice is to the universe. It's like, that's what the guild navigators use to deform their bodies and fold space. It's like even David Lynch did it with a little bit of a crawl when Paul Atreides is going through his tablet and learning about this the planet Arrakis. It's like a little snippet, and you got all this information. It's like, it's just, I love it. I liked it. Don't get me wrong. It's not.
No, I hear you.
It's a great movie. He did a fantastic job. It's just the things he chose to not focus on and cut out, and having baby Leah, the daughter, not being born, and I understand why they did it, because she needs so much information, but they could do a whole movie with just her at her birth, and so they wrote it to where she stays in the womb and she's conscious, so she's still a character in the movie, but she's inside, you know, Lady Jessica. It's like, I get why they did that. Again, I'm a little frustrated with it because there's so much stuff I wanted to see. So hopefully, there's they're already greenlighting Dune Messiah. You heard that?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a third part.
And he said that he's going to wait a couple of years, which I thought was wise, to do that one, because he said in the book, there's some passage of time, so he wants to wait till everybody's a little bit older to do that one to make sense.
That does make sense.
As a director.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, I liked it. And I just missed the stuff, the weirdness that made Dune so good for me was all the weird stuff that David Lynch focused on.
Yeah.
And there's things he changed I love. I love that Paul kills the Baron.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was great. Oh, by the way, guys, spoilers.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Everybody hasn't seen the show yet. But because in the book, his sister kills him with the cone jabar, the needle.
Yep.
And also, the Harkonnen, the not Fade, but the other one, Raban. Raban gets killed by Duncan, which is great. Like, there's certain things that he let people do and change. And I like that he made the Baron in this one really terrifying. Baron Harkonnen is absolutely terrifying in this movie. And both of them. He's absolutely just a force. He's super smart. He's not crazy and erratic like the David Lynch one was.
Yep.
A cartoon villain. He was really sinister and smart, and he's always was thinking and plotting, and he was scary. So I did like that. So.
Oh yeah, and the grotesqueness of it, and so, sitting in that black goo, like it's just such a, it's a whole vibe, and I think they nailed that vibe for sure. We brought up the baby and Lady Jessica and his sister being in the womb on our review of it, or sort of our assumption about it. But I'll put this to you. I thought it was interesting that it adds that layer of abstraction. Like, if she was a character, you get the sense that, like, she's speaking as her character. But now, because she's speaking through the Lady Jessica filter, adds to the machinations that I think he's highlighting. But it is a weird change. I don't know why he's doing it yet. But
I guess, to be honest with you guys, the practicality of it, because in the book, you're gonna have to cast a 2 to 3 year old who is super hyper intelligent and walks around like an adult.
Yeah.
And they realized that was a big can of worms. Not just that it's the, you have to pull it off convincingly, right? And have a kid on set. But then they realized, well, we can't, we have to probably do something digital. You have to get somebody there or a little person. And I'm sure they thought a lot about it and realized it was just such a financial nightmare. And I thought, I looked at that slide. I was like, I missed it, but I understand why, as a film goer and movie buff guy, I see why he did it. So I get it.
Oh, but that's interesting that you can, it's nice that you can be a fan and you aren't distracted by like seeing the seams, I guess it were.
Now I have to add.
Oh, yes. Oh, wait. There's one thing, dude. My biggest rant.
Yes.
My only thing I disliked about the entire movie, the one thing and my biggest criticism was, is that you just said it, weapons, the Fremen, they have these things called needlers and they shoot these darts and that's what the Harkonnens were being taken out silently. You see the little darts, the helmets being cracked open because the Fremen were shooting these guns called needlers. And dude, you don't have to do a big explanation. Just show a Fremen loading his gun. Dude, there's guys who built guns and laser weapons and props, and you don't see crap. There's one maybe quick shot of Paul loading something, or I think Chani's loading something, and it's like it's not even close up of it. It's like a mid shot of her just going like this, and you're like, what is that, dude? Give me one close up of what her loading, and then or establish a new dude. People built stuff off the wazoo for this movie, and you don't have 2 seconds, 5 seconds. Any shot of the entire weapons or dart or needle in the entire movie. No weapons. None. Zero. Zip. You see blades, and they don't, and again, you don't go into history why there's no computers and laptops anywhere because of the whole AI, they outlawed AIs because they were kids. Yeah. There's all these little nuances of stuff that I know, but no props. That entire movie, I was waiting for one close up or a medium shot of somebody pulling a dart or a pistol. And you don't. There are all these big wide shots of people running stuff in their hands, and you can't see what the hell it is. So,
that's so like
no establishing shots of them.
And that's absolutely true. You're missing the at least like the side shot frame that the nerds can freeze to, you know, at least base their replicas off of.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. Zero. Zip. Nothing. You have to wait on Pinterest. You have to wait for a couple of years, and you find it all on Pinterest.
Yeah. See, the prop master's still there. Now, I have to ask Mikey, because Mikey's kind of the archivist of our... Did we have that nerd seed question at episode 52?
If we did, it probably developed in that episode. I'd have to check the archives.
You'd have to check? Because we have like a very standard question at this point that we ask everybody, because we believe that people who are getting to your industry and people who like the geeky, nerdy stuff that we do, there's always a nerd seed that was planted in them and the fertile soil that grew into the beautiful nerd tree that we all are today. And we like to find out where that nerd seed was. Like, for example, for me, I was a little boy. My dad took me to this movie called Empire Strikes Back, and it blew my head up. And then they told me that there was another one already, so I had to see that one. And then that was my nerd seed was Star Wars. So and that was where I became a Star Wars nerd first, and then that led into, you know, Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop gaming and all that kind of stuff. And that was my community. So somewhere the prop master nerd seed was put in you, and we would like to know what that is.
I was a product of the 60s and 70s. So when starting off, I liked, don't get me wrong, I loved Star Trek when I was a kid. And I dug it. I'm like, ooh, that's cool, Star Trek. Like, sci-fi. But I was still very, very young at the time. I wasn't able to get my hands on craft or anything. But as I progressively got over, the big nerd seed that started was a TV show from Gerry Anderson called Space 1999. Mm.
Yeah.
And if you guys have never seen, it is so remarkable. And it was the first season I absolutely loved. It was very dark and very brooding, hardcore sci-fi. And as I got older, I started learning more and more of the history behind Space Nintendo, how it became to be and how the show almost never happened, because it originally was going to be was supposed to be the second season of the show UFO. Gerry Anderson had a popular TV show called UFO, and they were going to do a second season, and it was a this communication. And then they're like, well, no, that we're not going to do it. We do something else. And so they pulled the plug, but he had all the sets and things built for his second season of UFO. And he had changed gears and rewrote it to turn it into Space 1999. But anyway, that was my nerd seed. And I loved it. And I was, and of course I was very young, and I was making a comm link and a stun gun out of cardboard and poster board. And that was it. Sure enough, this, then you're right. Then Star Wars came out, the very first one. And for all you kids out there, the reason that film made such an impact on the world, because the stuff you take for granted when you watch visual effects on movies and TV now did not exist. Mm-hmm. It was never there. Nothing. So when you went to the theater in 1977, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, 1977. I was 14 years old. I went to the theater, and spaceships flying like airplanes and laser beams shooting out. It's like mine was, like you said, like you were when you saw Empire. My mind was blown. I was like, holy shit. I was like, I can't believe this. And that nobody in cinema history saw anything like that. So all us kids, we lost our minds. And Kidder, the toy company that got the rights to make the toys, weren't even in the stores yet. The toys weren't even out yet. So they made this thing called the Early Bird Certificate Set. It was a giant envelope. And I found one at Target. And it was a big cardboard envelope that you bought. And it was a promise that they're going to get you figures. So you'd buy this envelope, and you'd fill out your name and address, and you'd mail it off. And they said within so many, like 6 to 7 weeks, you know, to you might as well have been a year, you would send it off, and you would get R2-D2 and Luke Skywalker and C-3PO. And those are the first, and you, by buying this envelope was a guarantee. So you already paid for the figure. So it was pre-order. And sure enough, on that day in the mailbox came, and lo and behold, it's like, gobble about it. I'm like, what's this for me? And there he was, Darth, and Luke Skywalker with this little telescoping lightsaber.
Yeah, the camera of his arm.
Right. And the droids came later, and he had a little display case. And that was, oh, it changed our lives. Everybody. It's just like, it was such a, yeah. And George Lucas, in his brilliance, was like, hey, I want to keep all the rights to my toys. And Hollywood was like, we don't make money through toys. We'll keep that. And that never will happen again.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We send out IOUs. We keep our money. Well, yeah. you did say the magic buzzword of Hollywood, and you said up at the top that you quit Hollywood 9 years ago. You said, no more. I'm done with the mob that is Hollywood. But much like the classic movie, the mob, they sucked you back in. What was it that sucked you back in?
I was struggling. Like, you know, my wife is like, hey, you know, I might get a job at a coffee shop. I'm like, babe, I don't want you working at the coffee shop. And so I was like, you know something? I'm gonna dip my toe back in the industry. So I went back to the hand prop room as the prop used to work at, and I went back, and it was funny. Within the first 3 months I was there, reminded me why I left first time. So I was there, and in the span of time I was there, I worked on the series Fallout. We worked on the Fallout series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We've talked about that on podcasts. We are big gamers, and I'm a big Fallout guy.
So is Mikey. So huge.
And we talked about it.
Me too.
We talked about it on our nerd news, and then we didn't know you were involved, and then we saw you put something up on your Instagram, and we went, oh, 10? No way. Yeah, we freaked out. Yes, tell us everything you're allowed to about this now, please.
And also tell us about your Fallout fandom, because it's awesome to hear that you're a fan too.
Yeah.
I am so much of a fan. If you go to my website, evilpetsmith.com, you can pick up some Wasteland armor I made from the first game. I loved it. I'm sorry, Fallout 4. That's the game that wrote me in, was Fallout 4. I love the open world. I loved walking around. And I just... so late to gaming, I really am. And so I started playing that, got into it. We made a lot of stuff for the Fallout series, which the guys, we made a lot of stuff is from the game, like the, you know, the radiation meter checkers, mm-hmm. like all the vault builders have, mm-hmm. little radiation thing. The guys in the lab guns have, we made those.
Awesome.
We made, yeah, there's some dart guns. I think in the show, our hero goes out in the open world with just a gun that shoots like, drug, like a tranquilizer gun.
Yep.
There are rad roaches in this show. And in the Rad Roach, like you would assume, they're digital, a lot of CG. But there's a gag in the show where a dog carries it or carries a Rad Roach. And so my job was to make a Rad Roach that the dog could carry. Huh? So we made a Rad Roach. So when the show gets released, I'll post pictures. So.
Oh, wow.
That's so cool. But
did the pop stuff and I kind of backed away from it. And then I got called for a fun job. It was actually a really fun job. It was for a company called Autonomous, the makeup effects company. My friend Jason works there. And they got the gig to do American Horror Story. It was an ad campaign. And Kim Kardashian, and they wanted two giant spiders. And they said, Ted, we need two giant spiders, and we have like a week and a half to do them. And we can't sculpt them and 3D print them in time. That would never happen. Could we be foam fabricate them? And I said, yes, I can. So I went in there with me, myself, and my friend Bruce Mitchell and my friend Jacqueline. We had three of us. And we knocked out these spiders in like about two and a half weeks. And they looked great. And I think I posted them on social media. You guys can check them out on my Instagram. But that was another fun job. That was fun.
It's crazy that like not only are you back in full force, but you're making such cool stuff.
Yeah.
Like American Horror Story, I'd imagine that spiders is rad, but they do so much crazy stuff there. And then Fallout is, like you're saying, you get to make everything from the little meters to the monsters. That's crazy. That's such a great way to get back into the game.
I think it's kind of neat that someone has come to you and said, hey, can you foam fabricate this? Because I remember when we interviewed you a long time ago, you were like trying to convince people that you could foam fabricate stuff. I remember you telling a story where you're like, you know, I can make this thing out of foam for way cheaper and much better than what you're wanting to do. And they're like, what are you talking about? And you like secretly made something and they didn't realize that it was made out of foam. But now the king of foam is, hey, man, can you make this out of foam, please, Ted? We need something made out of foam.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, I think Star Trek in the Darkness, wasn't it? Is it the one?
Yeah, Star Trek in the Darkness.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy turnaround, but we did that. Yeah, and now it was like a double-edged sword because then once they learned I could do it, they started throwing too much at me. I was like, wait, hold on. there's some things I can do faster than others, certain things other. It depends on how detailed you want to get. But right now, my friend Eddie, which he runs, oh my God, DD Creative or Dita Creative. I feel so bad now. I'm working for him. I don't even know his Instagram. But I think if you guys follow, I posted on my Instagram, we're doing costumes for a rock band.
Yes.
Called Darset. And these guys are really cool, like rock techno band. And they wanted a different look for themselves. And so that's what I'm in the process of doing right now. We haven't, I mean, it's kind of a soft launch. We haven't officially launched it yet because we did the costumes and they did a fitting. And so a couple of things we're tweaking it. And that's what I'm doing right now. We're doing some alterations to the costume.
Okay.
And then they're going to go on. So once they announce it and start posting pictures, then I will do so. But right now we're not really, they got a little video teaser and that's all I can do right now. I can't show you more than that. But the stuff that's really, really, really cool. I'm really happy with it. So that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing right now.
That's super cool. I do have one nagging question, and if you can't say it until it launches, that's fine. But like, what's the unique creative process? Because like, yes, you've done cosplay and you are a prop master, so like costuming it isn't difficult for you. But like, that's got to be such a weird mindset to be like, okay, I have to do this for like a band and it has to move around and like be performed in. Like, what was weird about that experience?
Well, that's the cool thing is that I didn't have anything to do with that because that was my friend Eddie did all that. He was he designed all the costumes, okay. All the work is done, and so he did it all in the wonderful world of 3D. So he 3D printed everything. So everything's been 3D printed, and then we made molds, made them out of flexible urethane, and he painted them. And I'm helping install lights, and I helped do the padding and stuff like that. So most of it was already made, so I'm just helping him with the strapping and how to pad it comfortably for people.
I get you.
That's mostly it. But for all you people out there, you crafters out there, yes, I still do it on YouTube. And if you guys don't know, I stream every Sunday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on Evil Ted Live. It's our Evil Ted channel, but I do it on Evil Ted Live. I do it live. And I'm working on, I just saw the animated. I was watching Netflix. And it's Onishimo.
Yep.
Onishimo, this guy wears his demon gauntlet and fights. And I loved it. So I'm making that right now. And I'm once it's all done, I'm going to have that pattern available soon. So I'm still working, but I'm still going to make YouTube stuff. It's my passion. I'll never stop making YouTube channel. I won't stop.
Oh, that's awesome to hear.
I'm glad. Yeah. We need Ted on YouTube all the time.
And it's funny. And it's funny to hear the nerd little kid come out. Like, you saw the one cool thing. You're like, oh, fighting gauntlet. Neat. I have to make that.
Yeah.
That's cool. And what I love about it, too, is small. It's something, it's like, there's a lot of things I want to build. And I realize I had a conversation with my wife that I'm not out of space in my shop. I need space. And so I've convinced her. I live in a loft downtown Washington. We have these giant tall ceilings. And I've convinced her that, hey, can we put a second floor in the kitchen? Because all this real estate. And she's like, oh, totally. So that's my next plan. So once again, so money said, don't get a contract. I want to put a second floor in the kitchen so I can take all the stuff and storage and put it there. They can give me more room so I can build bigger stuff. Don't want to get back to building a full costume. I build a lot of helmets and props and small things like that. But I want to get back to building a full costume again. Because I did the Battle Sister. And that's when I realized that I ran into it all. Like, uh-oh, I got this Battle Sister. Where am I going to put her? So she's in my shop right now. So I'm like, I don't have any place to put her. So I need space to put stuff away so I can make room to make more stuff.
To make bigger and awesomer stuff.
Yeah, that Battle Sister is great. It's got the purity seals on it and everything. It looks perfect. And all it made me think was that if Henry Cavill is going to do some of the Warhammer 40,000, call Evil Ted up. He's already built stuff worthy of being on screen.
Oh, for sure.
You know what's interesting is that just learning about the game and the lore behind it, and the more and more I learn, I scratch my head and go, oh my goodness, how are they going to bring this to screen? Like, it's so dark, it's so weird, it's so disturbing that, and also the Marines, the soldiers are just, they're killing machines.
Yep.
There's not much about personality there. They're just jarheads. And then you have the Imperium, the evil people. There's nobody nice in 40K. Nope. They're all terrible people. They're all monsters and murderers. And it's like everybody's trying to kill each other. So you have to have a character or a sympathetic person to follow in this journey. So it's like, how do you convey this crazy lore? And again, this would never have happened if it wasn't for Henry Cavill being interested in this cult. And that's the God's honest truth, because because he's got draw, people love him. And just because of The Witcher, the idea that he's leaving The Witcher show, a lot of people are just so mad and bouncing from the show that even though they shoot, I have nothing against the other actor replacing him, but there's some tall shoes to fill. Like, it's like, I think the fan, it's like the show probably won't do as well or last any more seasons after this, because people loved him as The Witcher.
Mm-hmm.
And when you producers kind of nonchalantly blow up an actor or somebody like that, Henry Cavill's a nerd and he loved it. And he's like, you guys aren't following the books. Like, what are you guys doing? Why do you want to, what do you feel you need to change something that works?
Yeah.
You know? Everything's written.
He's the most buff, handsome nerd who's ever existed.
Right?
Yeah.
That guy hit the genetic lottery.
I know.
Yeah, we talked about him on the podcast. It's so cool. Like, yes, he's a presence and he has Hollywood draw, but he is also a nerd. And the fact that he's on the precipice to bring grimdark as a genre to the mass public. Yeah. I don't think the mass public is ready for grimdark, but I want it all.
Yeah, I think they could. I mean, there's a lot of Warhammer 40,000 novels that could be adapted. There's a whole Eisenhorn series that's about an Inquisitor. That they're kind of like almost detective books. Like we talked about on the podcast before, there's the whole Space Wolf series of books that follows Ragnar Blackmane, the youngest wolf lord ever, and that's an interesting series of books. So there's stuff there. There's characters. They're all anti-heroic, but they're interesting.
Really shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no good guys in Warhammer. There's no good guys.
No, not at all. It's pretty fun, pretty wacky. I'm trying to get something else. You guys, if you have any more questions or anything you guys would want to know,
how much other than the stuff you worked on for Fallout, do you know anything more about it? Because I saw the trailer and I got excited. It looks good.
I like what they're doing, at least pretty much what I've heard. I think it's interesting. I know some people, like, they're not going to do it. Like, you know, when you play the game, you're the person who goes on the journey, right? And it's just nice. They're doing this. There's these characters, and there's a guy, a great character actor. He's playing a guy who turns into a mutant or a feral. What do you call it?
Yeah, you're talking about a ghoul.
What are they called?
The ghouls?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, there's a guy in the show that we follow who ends up becoming a ghoul. And from the game, people don't know the game. It's like, you can live for like forever as a ghoul. You're this radiated person that can live for like years, if not decades. And I think the journey is going to be mostly with him. And I think the girl, and also from the trailer, we've seen a girl who comes from the vault. And I'm so excited that they have the whole Brotherhood and all the armor and all those guys. Again, you play as a vault dweller, but if you were playing as somebody who survived after the fallout and you were walking around and you bump into the Brotherhood, you would join them because they're military, they got all the power, like, and all you got to do is, you know, be a soldier and get a meal and like do your part to. There's so many great avenues of like why I make that game so great is that there's different ways that people get pulled in these different communities and stuff. But I'm wondering if we'll see in this first series that we're going to see anything about the sense. Are they going to do anything with the sense? Are they going to do anything with the super mutants?
Yeah.
Because I know that's a bit of that might be a budget issue. Yeah. I think because that's a lot of super. That's like a big crazy thing you can do. So my wife is like, oh, they're going to have Strong in it? Because she's watching me play the game all the time. I said, I tell you what, babe. I said, if they do Strong, it probably won't be the second or third season. Because I said, you got to hope. Because you're asking people to swallow a lot on the show. So, because the whole super mutant is another lore and the backstory too. I said, I think just getting the people on board with the ghouls and the survivors and the vaults and, yeah, it's a great show. I think it'd be a great game for great premise for a game. So there's so much information and lore to borrow from for a series. They could go forever if they wanted to, you know.
Oh, absolutely, it could go forever. And that's interesting to hear that it's like the ghoul is sort of the hook, because asking the audience to buy into Fallout is a big ask, because there is a whole world there. But when I started playing Fallout, it was always that one crazy NPC you come across and he starts giving you those weird dialogue options. You're like, wait, is this, you're talking to me this way? Like, oh, you're a crazy person. So the fact that we get a weird ghoul to follow around sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, fun stuff.
Like we said, we heard Fallout when it was dropped, like they started doing promo art for it, and we were like, oh cool, like we're fans of the series. And then like once we knew your name was attached to it, like we've been following it like hawks, just because that makes it just it's doubly cool.
Like I said to you guys, I was thrilled when I started seeing pictures from the set of the vault. That was like, oh my god, this is right from the game. And then the guys doing the show really were obsessed about the details, and they brought people from Bethesda to the game, and they brought them in for everything. Like they had them really put a lot of input on the script and the say and stuff. And for the fans out there, what they're doing is you're going to see a lot of elements from different games. They love Fallout the universe, the whole world.
Awesome.
And so when you've seen this, the movie, the show we'll be watching, I think it's heavily inspired by Fallout 4, but there's so many things are borrowed from all the other Fallout games. There's nods to everything. So it's probably the hardcore fan of people out there. It doesn't matter. It's just, as long as it's stuff they're pulling from all the different Fallout worlds. So there's elements and different things you'll see from different games in this series for sure. But it's not just one particular Fallout journey. They're just going to borrow elements for so much separate stuff. So it's just kind of a cool thing to do.
And it sounds great.
Huh. And then knowing that you're excited about it makes me excited about it.
Definitely.
That's a sign for me.
Well, Ted, where can everyone find you on the socials, on the internets?
Thank you, guys. Hey, get me on Instagram. I'm Instagram, EvilPet_channel. I'm on Facebook as EvilPet. It's EvilPet on Facebook. And also get all the goodies at EvilPetSmith.com. And, of course, my YouTube channel is the EvilPet channel. And I do videos and tutorials. and I do have panels coming. I just realized I have an assistant named Peter, and he's like, Ted, it's been a year since you've done a pattern. I said, yes, sir, I know. So I got patterns in the work right now. I'm going to be doing the Oni Gauntlet coming up soon. I'm working on some shin guards, some sci-fi shin guards and bracers I want to do. Because my 10th anniversary is coming up soon. I think my daughter just told me that. I got a shirt. So I think it's sometime in September, I think. But my 10th anniversary is on my 10th anniversary on YouTube. I'm going to, I made a video called How to Make Male Armor. It's like a space marine, like the space sci-fi tech armor I made, like again, going on 10 years ago. And people have been asking for that pattern. So I'm going to make that pattern available. So I'm working that right now too. So that pattern that I made years ago that people asked for, I'm thinking, I should have done that years ago. Why did I not do that? So I didn't do it. So I'm working on it right now, updating the pattern, working the bugs out of it. I'm going to make that available too. So thank you so much for your patience, because I did get wrapped up in the movie work again, but I'm never going to stop doing my YouTube channel and patterns and content, because it's I just love it. And I love the community. So I will never stop doing it. You just have to be patient with me. Things slow down a little bit, but I'm going to pick it back up. I promise.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah, man. Awesome. No, just it, keep making it. It's the passion. It's not the timing.
Yeah.
to crib your phrase a little bit.
Definitely. We want to thank you so much for being here on our 300th episode.
Woo,
Ted.
300.
Oh yeah. 300, man. Yeah. 300, guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. We also want to thank all our fans for supporting us through all these 300 episodes. We call our fans positrons because we try to promote positivity in fandom. We try to be positive here.
Amen.
Yeah.
You got it.
If you want to hit us up on our social medias, you can find us at Assuming Pod on most all the socials.
Mm-hmm.
You can also send us a Gmail, assumingpositions@gmail.com. Every week I ask Mikey, how do you want them to format the Gmail?
Oh, this one's easy. Do it Fallout style. Send me some green text on a black screen that looks like it's on a CRT from the 1930s.
Yeah, awesome. That's a great way to do it. If you like what we're doing here and you want to support us, you can buy us a coffee. buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod. That's our tip jar. You can throw some tips in there. We want to thank you once again, Ted, for being here. Thank you so much.
Oh, guys, thank you so much.
We will keep in touch with you for sure. Mm-hmm. We also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our napsing, Not Scott Productions for our equipment.
Good to be with you.
Jazzar for our music. And we hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Thank you so much.
And get ready for Fallout.
Yeah, get ready for Fallout. Yes.
Episode 300.
Episode 300.